As we start our second week, let's jump right back into the Rambam's history of halacha. We had started last week. Rambam was describing Moshe Rabbeinu's Beis Medrash. Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was teaching Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu would convey it to Klal Yisrael. He would teach it to as we saw, to Aaron and to the other Kohanim, Elazar Nisamar, to the Zakenim, to all of Klal Yisrael. Every Jew had a chance to hear it from Moshe at least once, and every single Jew had a chance to hear the Shir at least four times. Whether all for Moshe or some combination, hearing it from Moshe, hearing it from Aaron's sons, and perhaps from the Zakenim. But every Jew who wanted to enter Moshe's Beis Medrash had the chance to hear the Shir four times, stressing the importance of Chazara, and to hear at least once directly from Moshe Rabbeinu. And there was already learning and teaching going on. They were learning from Moshe, and there was already a chain of Masorah. The dynamic of Masorah was already alive during the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu. Obviously, he's going to take on new significance after Moshe Rabbeinu passes away, and we'll be getting to that. But even during the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu, there's already a notion of Masorah, of learning from Moshe and then passing on. And what was it exactly they were learning and teaching? So here we left off at the very bottom, right over here. He said, you remember, after everyone heard the Shir, they would go out and teach. And they would go out and chazer and share and one to the other. And they would write part of it down. Because as the Rambam stressed, each time HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught a mitzvah to Moshe Rabbeinu and he would share it with the Jewish people, it was the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebaalpeh. It was that which would ultimately be written in the Chumash, the Torah Shebichsav, and that's what apparently in Shir no one was writing, everyone was just listening. The notes they were writing down, so to speak, were afterwards. And specifically, the Torah Shebichsav, the Psukim, were being Megillah, Megillah, Nitna. It was being written down piecemeal over the course of the 40 years. They would make sure they knew the Psukim, knew how to pronounce the Psukim, they would write the Psukim, and as he says here, they also learned the interpretation of the Psukim. The Kach, Omrim Chachamim Aleihem Hashalom, the very bottom. Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaalpeh. And now let's sort of focus on that Nakuda a little bit, on Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaalpeh, before we return to the historical axis here and continuing in Moshe Rabbeinu's life. It says, Omrim Aleihem Hashalom, B'braisa. The Sifra explains, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai. Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks Moshe Bahar Sinai. This is the beginning of which parsha? Which sedra? What color is George Washington's white horse? White. Bahar, exactly. Right. This is it. Bahar Sinai, obviously the beginning of Parsha's Bahar. There's a very famous Rashi. Rashi and the Rambam are both quoting The Sifra is the Medrash Halacha on Sefer Vayikra. Ma Tamalo Bar Sinai. Torah always says Vaydabra Shem Oshalemar, Vayomra Shem Oshalemar. We don't usually get the byline, the where it happened. Hashem told to Moshe Rabbeinu. All of a sudden here, it was in the Har Sinai. Ma Tamalo Bar Sinai. Halakol Tar Kula. Never Bar Sinai. So what's the significance? Lomer l'cha mashmita nemru kilaloseu protaseh v'diktuken misinai avkol ha-mitzvahs nemru kilalosein protaseh v'diktuken misinai. The Medrash points out that the Torah here is circling back to say that it was already conveyed both the text as well as the interpretation misinai. L'mashal omar l'cha. It says, let me give an example. What do I mean by Torah Shebaalpeh Mehar Sinai? And remember, we mentioned last time this idea of Torah Shebaalpeh Mehar Sinai. So it does raise the question of, so if Moshe Rabbeinu knew everything, where's Machlokas come from? But let's see what the Rambam has to say. L'mashal Amar Lecha. It says, for instance, Hashem Amar Lo Besukas Teishu Shivasem. A pasuk in Parshas Emor, right before Parshas Bahar. Basukas Teshu Shiva Syama mitzvah to live in to sit, literally, in the sukkah for 7 days. That's four words. Okay, the pasuk continues. Call Ezrach Bisrael Yesh for Basukos. Not a lot of detail in the Psukim. You should live in the sukkah for 7 days. Yacha kachodio, that's The first thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu is the language of the pasuk. But then he tells them plenty of more information. It's obligatory only for men. Women can volunteer, but not obligation. Number one. And there are other people who are off the hook. If you're sick, if you're traveling, no chiyuv sukkah. The schach has to be something that grows from the ground. You can't use wool, you can't use silk. Those don't grow from the ground. It has to be plant material, as we know. And everyone knows, what else? What are the three basic rules of schach? It has to be tzomech min hakarka, and two and three? Three basic rules? Yes, on the one hand, it grows from the ground. On the other hand, it's no longer growing from the ground. Good, it has to be detached. You can't build your walls under a tree and say, "Hey, well, the trunk of the branch of the tree are tzomech, you know, gedule karku." Yes, they're gedule karku. It has to be cut from the ground. Good. And number three, who said? I couldn't tell who was saying what. What was the third point? Has to give shade. Okay, good, good, good. Okay, good, very good. Has to give shade. And that's what the schach needs to do. Fantastic. The function of the schach, Shlomo says, the schach has to be a shade giver. If you don't remember the first mission in Sukkah, it has to be, again, to have a little sprinkling, it has to be thick enough, it's actually providing substantive shade. And the material of the schach is gedule karka, but now detached. And number three, let's take a look in the Rambam. Velo bekalim. And you can't use tools. Or food. You can't use anything that's makabel tum. I feel mashal tzamech min ha'aretz kamach tzalot v'abugadim. I can't take cotton clothing, a cotton sheet, and throw it on top. Cotton sheet grew from the ground. It's detached. Yeah, but the schach is supposed to be junk. Schach is supposed to be raw material, or otherwise not a kli, not food, not makabel tum. So those are my three rules. As an aside, schach has to have grown from the ground, no longer attached to the ground, and not makabel tum. For instance, not a kli and not food. Okay, so this is a lot of details. And goes on to shift what you do. Achela shtia sheina yiba kol shivas yamim. I'm living there, I'm eating, I'm sleeping, and the size, lo yi chalala pachas mi shiva tfachim, orech al shiva tfachim rochav, a minimum footprint of 7 tfachim by 7 tfachim, yi begava pachas sar tfachim. Minimum height of 10 tfachim. Wow. That was a pretty rapid review of the key points of the first two prakim of Mishnayos Sukkah. I just very quickly ran through sort of the major concepts in terms of what makes a kosher sukkah, in terms of material, in terms of dimensions, and what you do with a sukkah. What you do with a sukkah and who needs to do it. As a very yeah. Exactly. So what the Rambam is describing is HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches Moshe Rabbeinu the Pasuk and Achak Hahudio, and then Hashem also tells Moshe Rabbeinu the basic dinim. The basic dinim. The Rambam just gave us as an example. So here's sort of the core Torah Shebal Peh on Sukkah. The Torah Shebuchsav on Sukkah is Sukkah's Teish Roshiloh Yavim. And the core Torah Shebal Peh were these 8-10 dinim. But what you make Sach out of, minimum dimensions, what you do in the sukkah, and who's obligated to do in the sukkah, and for how long. For how long is actually, that's chumash. But all the other points, and then he says, kashaba shaliach avasham, Moshe Rabbeinu, each time, nitna lo zos ha-mitzvah u-peirusha. So Moshe Rabbeinu comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gets the mitzvah and the peirusha, then comes to Klal, so he's the shaliach. He's the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's delivery service to deliver Torah to Klal Yisrael. So he's delivering Zos HaMitzvah U'Peirusha, this mitzvah and its interpretation. In other words, the Torah, the Pasuk in the Chumash, Torah Shebichsav, as well as the Torah Shebal Peh. V'kach Sheish Meos U'Shlosh Esrei HaMitzvahs. And that's how it went for all 613 mitzvahs. Heinu Peirushan, the mitzvah itself, and the interpretation. You'll notice that the Rambam keeps using the word mitzvah. This is mitzvah and peirush. Mitzvah and peirush. He's used that a few times. You see that he used the word mitzvah to mean the pasuk in the Chumash. As a matter of fact, I think I may have mentioned it last time. The Rambam is very famous for a number of things. One of which is he wrote one of the many significant works that he wrote is the most famous count of the 613 mitzvahs. The Gemara tells us there are 613 mitzvahs. Doesn't tell us what they are. That's quite a question mark there. There are 613 mitzvahs, and the Gemara sort of drops the mic. Well, what are 613 mitzvahs? I think I might mention you last time. The Rambam had a very important, they were Gaonim before the Rambam, or Yishalim after the Rambam, who worked on counting the mitzvahs. But one of the things that was unique about the Rambam's count is that he was very methodical, very organized. He doesn't just have a section. Section 2 of his Sefer Mitzvahs is what are the 248 mitzvahs I say. Section 3 is what are the 365 mitzvahs los I say. Now, which section did I leave out? Exactly, section 1. Well, if section 2 all the mitzvahs essay, section 3 all the mitzvahs los essay, and 248, 365, that adds up to 613. So what's section 1? So the answer is section 1. The Rambam said, we can't just jump into counting mitzvahs. I mean, there are thousands of dinim. There are tens of thousands of dinim. You can't just sort of jump in and say, oh, well, let's figure out what are the 613 mitzvahs. What? Not everything that's a din is a mitzvah. So Rambam says, let's be organized. He was a very organized man. He said, before we get to counting the mitzvahs, first we have to figure out, obviously, there have to be criteria. Like, what does a din need to do to be? Like, what qualities does a din have to have in order to qualify as not just a din, but a mitzvah? So Rambam has, first part of his first section of Sefer HaMitzvahs, 14 rules, 14 criteria. He calls them sharashim, the roots. The roots of counting mitzvahs, the way you got to start, is let's define what a mitzvah is. In a way that applied to Torah will give you 613 mitzvahs. That'll be the test, that you got the rules right. So he has 14 rules. The first one is Doraisa. After all, the Gemara says Hashem gave 613 mitzvahs to Moshe. Okay, so we're talking about Doraisas. Jews have to keep Drabbanans as well as Doraisas, but Drabbanans aren't called mitzvahs. They're called halachas, they're called dinim, but not mitzvahs. And rule number 2 for the Rambam is it has to be Torah Shebichsav. If there's a halacha that we only know from the Torah Shel Peh, it's binding, a Jew needs to keep it, but we would call it a din. We wouldn't call it a mitzvah. Mitzvah for the Rambam means Torah Shel Bechsav. And he goes on to give another 12 rules, but here you go. Yoni, I got you in a second. Here you go. And Rambam here keeps saying mitzvah means, again, specifically Torah Shel Bechsav. Hashem gave Moshe the mitzvah and its perush. The mitzvah and its perush. And here you see. He says, oh, he gave him the 613 mitzvahs, hein, the mitzvahs, uperushan, and their interpretation. And he makes it very clear he means Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shalpeh. Hamikraos ksuvim b'megillos, the psukim were written down in pieces of parchment, haperushim salpeh, and the explanation, that was being conveyed orally, it wasn't being written down, at least not in a public way. So that's as Rambam says. Rambam says, I look at Chumash, certainly the halachic parts of Chumash, maybe not, let's put aside the Agadah, the stories, and the discussions of ideas, but of larger themes, but the halachic parts of Chumash, Rambam says, I see 613 mitzvahs. 613 units in the Chumash, and each one has its basic explanation. Yoni Panich, you had a question. You've been very patient. Good question. The Tikkun Leil Shavuos, he said the 613 mitzvahs, though the Rambam's 613 mitzvahs. So I have to admit, I'm not much of a Tikkun Leil Shavuos person. I mean, I do try to stay up and learn, but so I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I would guess yes. The most commonly quoted count of mitzvahs is the Rambam. It's more popular than, let's say, the Bahag, who came before in the Balachas Gedolos, or the Ramban. Well, yeah? Yeah, they disagree. The Rambam actually wrote in his Sefer Mitzvahs, he keeps critiquing the Bahag. The Bahag lived 2-3 centuries before him, I think, the Balachas Gedolos. And the Rambam keeps saying, you know, the Bahag, he doesn't like the fact that the Bahag counted Hanukkah and counted Megillah. He says, what do you mean? Those are Derabbanans, you shouldn't count them as mitzvahs, and so on. So he has a lot of. The most famous critique perhaps, is one of the first. He Rambam says the very first mitzvah the Rambam counts, mitzvah saseh number one, is belief in God. Anochi Hashem lokacha. And he says, what happened to the Bahag? He didn't count mitzvah number one. The Bahag never counts a mitzvah to believe in God. He says, ugh. How do you get to all the details of tzitzis and tefillin and tzedakah and kashrus and Shabbos? You missed step, the first base. Yeah, first base, home plate. You haven't left the dugout yet. How do you talk about mitzvahs without talking about belief in God? So the Rambam is vociferous against the Bahag in general, and that point in particular. Now the Ramban, by the way, wrote a running commentary on the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs, where he often, not always, but often will defend the Bahag. Sometimes he'll even say, I might not personally agree, but let me explain what I think the Bahag was thinking. Now, you can't just knock the Bahag off like that. Let me explain what his rationale is. So on that point, this is a very famous debate. Bahag doesn't count the mitzvah and Luna. Rambam says, how could you not count mitzvah number one? And the Ramban says, look, we could discuss whether or not to count it, but I'll explain to you the Bahag's rationale. Ramban famously says, I don't think the Bahag thought that was a mitzvah, it's a pre-mitzvah. It says a mitzvah means a commandment. So commandment means there's a commander, and he's issuing commands. So if you know you're in the army, and you know that you're in a particular battalion, a particular squad, what have you, and that corporal, that lieutenant, he's your commander, okay, so once that's in place, so then, now that I know he's my commander, and it's have the chain of command, okay, so what's he telling me? So the Ramban says, you can't have a commandment to believe in God. That's the prerequisite for any commandments, is that you accept your divine commander-in-chief. So that's what Ramban says. Bahag didn't count it because it's the foundation on which all the commandments are built. Okay, so that's sort of an example. It's fascinating in its own right, and an example of the fact that, yes, there were different counts. There were things the Bahag counted, the Rambam didn't count, the things Rambam counted, the Bahag didn't count, or sometimes the question of how many should they be. Is there a mitzvah to give skila and a mitzvah to give sreifa, a mitzvah to give heri, a mitzvah to give chenek? Each of the arba mitzvahs is based on a separate mitzvah? Or is there one general mitzvah that for Bezin to give capital punishment, whatever the details are? Right? Or maybe I should break it down even more, or I shouldn't count it at all. And so there is a lot of debate about, everyone agrees there are 613, but beyond that, there's a lot of debate. Rav Sadia Gaon had his own count. So you'll come across different countings. The most common one, let's say when the Sefer HaChinuch wrote his mitzvah on mitzvahs, a Sefer HaMitzvahs organized the Parsha Shavua, he says, even though he was a Talmud of the Ramban, but he says, everyone uses the Rambam as such a well-accepted counting, I'll use the Rambam's counting in crafting my Sefer. So yeah, there are many different counts. Ram is definitely the most popular. This whole world of sort of like, it's like a little corner of the Torah literature, this whole literature of counting mitzvahs, fascinating byway. And coming back here, though, as we're seeing, let's wrap back to our core here. For the Rambam, this wasn't just a detail, the counting mitzvahs. Like, why was he spending so much time? For the Rambam, the 613 mitzvahs, that is the basic structure of halacha. That becomes clear, we'll see, in Mirtz Hashem. That is the basic structure of, and he organized all of Mishnah Torah as elaborating on the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs are sort of the 613 units, 613 elements of halacha. As we're seeing, there's, for the Rambam, the mitzvah really is that chunk of chumash. That pasuk, that piece of a pasuk, those couple of psukim, each topic, each halachic topic of chumash is a mitzvah. And again, Hashem taught to Moshe together with its perish. So from the outset, there's Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebapeh. The Rambam is spending time making this point in part because it's just fundamentally important, in part because it was a point of a lot of contention at many times in Jewish history, including the Rambam's time. If you are ever in the Old City, in the Old City of Yerushalayim, quick show of hands. Who here has ever been to the Old City of Yerushalayim? Okay, that's pretty solid. Okay, how many people here have been to? Do you know the big square near the Churvashul? You come in right near Mafen Neman. Okay, and from there, I don't know. Shov has maybe if you can walk for this one alleyway. You walk that way to Yeshiva HaKotel, right off of that square. You've been to Yeshiva HaKotel? Okay, solid. How many of you have noticed when you walk down that alley to Yeshiva HaKotel, across the street, this is a little more bikias. What's across the street, across the alley? Down, once you go down that little alley, all the way to Yeshiva HaKotel, Yeshiva HaKotel's in front of you, what's right behind you? Okay, good. So if you're facing four, so two, it's like four, a little to the right as the steps up to the Yeshiva HaKotel, and right, sort of to the left, there's some construction going on, and more accessible from Rehov Tveris Yisrael down below. And sort of 180 degrees away, if you swing around, there's a Karaite synagogue, Beit Knesset HaKaraim. As a matter of fact, that street that Yeshiva HaKotel is on is technically called Rehov HaKaraim. Not such not the name that Yeshiva HaKotel really wanted for their address, so they, I think, lobbied to have an alternative name for that street too. But strictly speaking, that's called Rehov HaKaraim. What are the Karaim? There are people who believed only in the Kra. They were a group that dates back over 1,000 years, a sect of Jews who decided that they're going to reject the Torah Shva Peh, and they're just gonna read the Chumash and live from the Chumash directly without any interpretation, much like the Tzedukim and the Baisusim did during the Bayesheni period. During the lifetime of the Rambam, the Karaites are negligible numbers-wise group. At the time of during the lifetime of the Rambam, they were very significant. They were like the establishment elites. They were the classy people, the Karaites. When the Rambam came to Egypt, he discovered that the elites were all Karaites who rejected Apikursim, rejected the Torah Shva Peh, and the people who accepted the Torah Shva Peh, they were like the hoi polloi. They were low on the social totem pole. That changed when the Rambam came to town. The Rambam was a man of towering intellect, and he really changed the. He brought Emuna in Torah Shva Bal Peh, brought it back in vogue, and made it acceptable to believe the Torah Shva Peh. And that was one of his major life projects was pushing back against the Apikursis of the Karaites who rejected Torah Shva Peh, who essentially made their own Torah Shva Peh. No one can actually live just based on the Chumash alone. Chumash doesn't give enough detail, which is part of what the Rav Shelah points out, part of the Rambam is pointing out here. But Sukkos Teishu Shivas Yamim, how would you know what to do? Just think about, the Rambam didn't give you every single Mishnah. He hasn't gone through all the details of Hilcha Sukkah, but he ran through, he says, Ma'akadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, the following 5, 6, 8, 10 details, without which Sukkim and Chumash aren't, they're not operable. They're not implementable. What would it mean to be Yoshev Basuka without any detail whatsoever? There has to be more. You look throughout Chumash, there's clearly more that's being assumed. Rav Hirsch talks about Torah Shebichsav, because this issue came up again during Rav Hirsch's lifetime. As part of one of the early pushes by Reform is maybe we should reject Torah Shebaal Peh. It's a history repeats itself. Let's just go back to Chumash. That tends to be the first step towards the dissolution of halachic connection entirely, Rahman al-Salam. So Rav Hirsch points out that Torah Shebichsav is like notes. I can't see who's taking notes, who's not taking notes. But if you take notes in class, right, there's always that guy. There's always that guy who's like has every word down. You know, he's taking dictation, word for word, verbatim. I don't know if any of you are that guy in your classroom during the year. And there's always that guy who mamash gets on every word. But most people don't. It's not to say even the most useful thing to have every word down. Usually what you're aiming for when you take notes is, you know, the highlights so that you can look back and remember what was said. The Torah Shebichsav is the notes alone without the Baal Peh, they're not going to necessarily do very much. I mean, you can reconstruct something. So that's what the Rambam says. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from that, he's reminding us, from the outset, there was Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shva Peh. As a matter of fact, it was all at first Baal Peh, and then a part of it gets written down, and the rest of it remains Baal Peh. Now, we're gonna pause here for today. We'll pick up with this Yemirtzei Hashem tomorrow as we turn our attention now to the Sugis, back to the Sugis of Tfilin. and to refresh the Sugya. But I will point out, we left a hanging question for now, which we will return to as we progress further in the Rambam's Hakdama, which is, so where's Machlokas coming from? But if you were paying close attention, you notice that the Rambam was speaking very vividly about Torah Shebaal Peh, but if you're looking really carefully, he also introduced a limit on the Torah Shebaal Peh. If you think back to what he did mention and what he did not mention, there was a limit. The Rambam's gonna, he just sort of left it hanging there now, and he's gonna come back in a couple of pages to that thread and tug on that thread a little bit and do some important things with it. So we're gonna pause here for now. Next time the Rambam's gonna move on to the final weeks of Moshe Rabbeinu's life and to the major change in halacha that happened when Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. Then from there again to Nevuah, and then to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, into Machlokas, into the parts of Torah Shebaal Peh. A lot coming up, Meretz Hashem, a lot coming our way.